This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In Texas, 56% of undergraduates who finished the college in 2016 left with an average of about $26,000 in debt. That's according to the Institute for College Access and Success. 5 out of 6 university systems in Texas are expected to raise tuition rates next year as a response to decreased funding from the state legislature. Nationally, a proposed tax plan has the potential to impact long-term costs for borrowers, colleges, and current students. So what options are available for student loan repayment? How can policy changes on the state and federal level affect access to higher education? What do you want policymakers to know about your reality with student loans? Call in. Talking about that this afternoon. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. Our guest this hour, we're joined by Sandy Baum, a senior fellow at the Urban Institute, Rebecca Aleos, the program manager at Cafe College, and Eva Marie Ayala. She is the education reporter for the Dallas Morning News. And welcome to The Source, all of you. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
So let's start off with a call from our voicemail line, and go ahead.
The real problem with tuition is that in the last 50 years, tuition has gone from $500 a semester to $50,000 a semester, particularly in higher-level schools, Ivy League. And there is no base reason for this terrible increase other than greed.
Sandy Baum, senior fellow at the Urban Institute. The reason behind all this is because tuition is getting too expensive. Is that right?
Well, there are a couple of questions here. One question is, why is tuition going up? And the other is, why are students borrowing? And, of course, rising tuition is one reason that students are borrowing, but there are other reasons as well. The fact is that many students have their tuition paid for by grant aid, for example, and they still borrow because they have to live while they're in school, and incomes have been stagnant in the economy, so that even if tuition hadn't gone up, we'd have students borrowing. Tuition has risen rapidly, and particularly in public institutions, and that is certainly related to the fact that state governments are covering a lower share of the cost of educating students than was the case even a decade ago or certainly 20 years ago.
But we've heard that complaint before. I think Governor Rick Perry was the person who echoed that quite a bit as well. So Eva Marie Ayala, education reporter at the Dallas Morning News, what are you seeing with education costs, higher education costs across Texas?
Well, a few years ago, Rick Perry, when he was governor, he wanted to promote the $10,000 degree to have more universities across the state be able to provide bachelor's at $10,000, but very few are able to do that. And there's been some stories recently done that pointed to schools like Texas A&M Commerce had really tried to get up front on that, but they found the logistics in trying to be able to do that, you know, very difficult. You know, some were able to do that in providing a lot of their courses and resources online, but a lot of students didn't feel like that was the same as, you know, physically being on a college campus.
But then Rick Perry also criticized particularly UT, saying that the school was larded up with so many researchers and people who weren't actually teaching students, that it was involved in things that took them off mission, and that's why it cost so much to go to school there, Eva Marie.
And there's been a lot of debate about that as well, back and forth, you know, and one of the, you know, big conversations about that is that universities say this is how discoveries are made. This is how, you know, new inventions come about, is by them, you know, investing in research, investing in exploration, and trying to balance that out with being able to give students an affordable tuition and affordable cost of living while they're at school with room and board can get very complicated very fast.
So Rebecca Alejos at Cafe College here in San Antonio, you see students coming in the door. Many of them, I imagine, want to be the first one in their family to graduate from college, and they don't have a lot of information about what's it going to take. You know, What do you tell them when they say, well, what about student loans?
So when we talk about student loans, we really talk about the cost of attendance. And what we want to do is have the student really think about what the cost is for them to attend the university, tuition and fees. If they're going to be living on campus, if it's in-state or out-of-state, we kind of look at the whole bigger picture of it. And when they're talking about borrowing, most of our students are really hesitant to borrow. They don't want any debt. They don't want to sign any forms. So, you know, we talk about the interest, we talk about repayment plans, we talk about all of the options that they have if they're not able to make those payments. We talk about borrowing smart, borrow what you need, don't over borrow. And I think that's one of the things that gets our students into trouble is they get an excessive amount of money and they only need a small percentage of it. So if they do that every year for 4 years, $5,000 could easily stack up and be $20,000 by the time they're done with their undergraduate degree. That's if they graduate and they don't end up transferring what we call a reverse transfer from a 4-year to a 2-year because of the cost of attendance. Maybe year one, they have it covered with some grants, some scholarships, but year 2, 3, and 4 is where they get caught with their student loan debt. And then they end up going to a community college where it's 10 or 20% of the cost of tuition, maybe not get a degree, but end up with debt.
Yeah, so the students, they're aware, they have an awareness that this problem does exist, I guess through the media and other reporting that these student loans do add up and people are graduating and or not graduating, but they're going through their college experience with a lot, coming out on the other end with a lot of debt.
Yes, and they're aware. When students get a loan, they have to do student loan counseling. I mean, it's a whole 30-minute process. But by the time they sign a promissory note and they get the refund check, they've already forgotten all of the whole counseling part of it. When repayment starts, how much the interest is, what you need to do to defer payments if you need to, what a forbearance is. You know, it's an interesting process. It goes from one ear out the other.
And Eva Marie Ayala at the Dallas Morning News, are you seeing that also in your reporting?
I think there's a much larger conversation starting to go around on that topic, particularly in Dallas County. We have the Dallas County Promise efforts that are starting up, and a big portion of that is to talk to students about financial aid and filling out the financial aid forms and getting them to talk about it so they start knowing what the process is early and knowing what those repayment plans are. You know, it's really easy to sit down and get overwhelmed about all the information that's being thrown at you. You need to take your SATs. You need to apply for college. You need to apply for financial aid. So, you know, every little detail and deadline is hitting you all at once. So what things like the Dallas County Promise, they're trying to make that a little bit more part of the integrated conversation when they're talking about colleges, talking about this financial aid aspect, so they're not as overwhelmed. You know, and I think it's going to take maybe a few years before some folks are, you know, able to set those programs in place.
Okay. So we're talking about student loans. And what was your experience dealing with the cost of higher education? Was it worth it? Do you have student loan debt? Are you on a repayment plan? Or is the amount of debt too overwhelming for you to even deal with? We want to hear your stories. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this quick break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We've all been told that the key to upward mobility is education. Get a good education, higher education, get that degree, the sheepskin, and then doors will open up for you. It's worth it to get the student loan so you can go through college and then you'll pay it back with all the money that you earn on the back end. Well, doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes you go through a process and you get a degree that it's hard to find the jobs. Those jobs just aren't there anymore. Maybe you racked up so much student loan debt that it's very hard to make those ends meet when you have to pay back all those loans at the interest rate. Maybe you thought that it wasn't going to be as burdensome as it was, that you thought there was going to be an income-based repayment plan that you could work with. Well, maybe it's harder than you thought. What happened to you? Give us a call. You want to hear your stories so that the public knows, policymakers know what the reality is for student loans and how it would benefit our society to have an educated workforce, a diverse educated workforce, and make higher education available to all. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. So Sandy Baum, senior fellow at the Urban Institute, do you have concerns? Is there anything that really bothering you overall about the way that student loan debt is acquired today?
There are lots of problems in the student loan system, and there are problems for some very specific groups of students, but the general picture of students are borrowing for college is not as terrible as people sometimes make it sound. We have to remember that the median earnings for people with a bachelor's degree, by the time they're 35 years old, like the median earnings are $30,000 a year higher than if they just had a high school education. So the idea that for most students you can pay it back out of your earnings is very reasonable. Now, it's not true for everyone, and we do have systems in place, like, as you mentioned, income-driven repayment. That means that if you take federal student loans, your payments won't be higher than you can afford. Students don't understand the system. It's complicated. So, for example, many students don't know the difference between a federal loan and a private loan. Private loans are much riskier, and too many students take those loans. We need to make sure that they don't. We need to make sure that they're borrowing for programs that they have a good chance of succeeding in, and that these are programs that do lead to good careers, good jobs, to constructive futures. So for some students who drop out, students who overborrow, there are some serious problems. But it's not borrowing per se that's a problem. It's borrowing for the wrong program or in the wrong way that's really a problem.
Give me an example of borrowing the wrong way or the wrong program.
Yeah. Okay. So, for example, if you if you have the choice between going to a community college and going to a for-profit institution, and the community college is charging $4,000 or $5,000 a year, and the for-profit institution has a similar program for $16,000 a year, and you borrow a lot of money and do that because it's closer to your house or the schedule is more flexible, you could really end up in a problem because the completion rates in all of these programs are very low. And borrowing and not completing a degree turns out to be the biggest problem for people. Another thing is if you have a choice about whether to live in a more expensive apartment or a cheaper apartment, and you think, oh, I could just borrow the money because it's been offered to you, you want to think twice about whether that's really the way you want to finance your education, whether you could save some money, do it a little bit more cheaply. You want to make sure that you apply for all the grant aid that you can apply for, fill out that financial aid application, so that you're borrowing and you're getting into a program that you have a good chance of succeeding in and where other students like you have positive records.
Let's go to the phone lines. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We really want to get some reality checks about how student loan debt is impacting people in our community. And this is Craig. Hey, Craig, thanks for calling in. You're on the air on The Source.
Thank you for having me. I'm enjoying the conversation, and I'm also hurt by it. In 1983, I went to a college in Georgia, and had student loans to facilitate that college degree that didn't work out. Ended up going into the United States Navy and continued pushing forward with my education. Got an associate's degree, and now I'm retired, 53 years old, and a full-time student at UTSA right here. As a matter of fact, I'm on my way to class right now. I am the father of three children who went through the same struggles that I went through with regard to these student loans, and it is predatory, it is a shame, and it is a sham. The first caller, I believe, had a point that there is no justification for the skyrocketing cost of education in this country other than greed.
All right, Craig, thank you for that. Predatory student loan operations. Let's go over to Eva Marie Ayala, education reporter at the Dallas Morning News. Have you seen in your reporting predatory issues?
Yes, there's been a lot of allegations on different for-profit schools around the country and in Texas as well. And right now, the Department of Veterans Affairs is actually investigating a local school here in the Garland area that was set up to serve veterans. It was targeted to serve veterans to help get them on track to earn HVAC certification. And now the Texas Commission on Veterans has revoked their approval to provide classes because of such a high use of GI bills and whether or not they were actually providing what they were intended to do. So I've heard from many veterans who went through that program. GI bills covered some of that, but a lot of them took out loans, some private loans, to be able to afford that with the promise that they could get their certifications at a much faster pace.
Rebecca Alejos at Cafe College, do you warn your clients, their potential students, about these programs?
We absolutely do. When a student comes in and says, you know, I'm right out of work, or I'm changing jobs, or I'm a veteran, I mean, whatever their situation is, if they're a non-traditional student, 9 times out of 10, they need to work, and they have families to support, but they also want to improve, right? So what we tell them is, okay, let's compare this for-profit institution program where, yes, it's going to be 6 months or 9 months or less than 2 years, the cost of that versus what the same program, same certification at a community college. We kind of weigh the differences. We look at opportunities for scholarships for non-traditional students. We talk to them about their financial aid, because when they go to a for-profit institution, they're totally right. That inflated tuition means they're going to have to take out a loan. $6,000 in federal student aid and grant and aid is a drop in the bucket when you're at a $60,000 program compared to a $4,000 or $5,000 program.
Do you think a lot of students, you know, they're only 19 years old, 18, 19 years old, and they see the commercials on TV, you know, and doing this program, and so they pass up on the great programs that I know exist at Palo Alto or mm-hmm. St. Phillips, and so they don't actually make the best decision.
And so what happens then is they come to see us, and they say, you know what, I started this program. I was there for 2 weeks, 6 weeks, 3 months, decided to drop out. It wasn't for me, but now I have this loan debt. I want to go back to school. So then we have that conversation. Well, how can we help you here at Cafe College? We go through the whole process of financial aid. Sometimes those students are on financial aid suspension. So then we have to talk to them about that process and how to appeal financial aid. And most of the time they have to pay out of pocket before they can get their financial aid set in place again. So we have to go through that conversation as well.
Let's go to another caller. This is Richard. Hi, Richard. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
All right, go ahead.
I actually had a real quick question. I picked up an associate's degree in air conditioning and refrigeration technologies, and since that time, I actually work for the city of San Antonio. I was wondering if the student loan forgiveness only transfers over to federal employees, or is that a possibility for a student or a former student that is now a city worker as well? I'll take my call off here.
Well, Richard, thank you for the call. And Rebecca Alejos, go ahead. What do you think?
Sure. So if you are in public service, if you are an educator, if you have been in the military, there are different opportunities for you to have loan forgiveness. The only caveat to that is you have to make sure that you've made at least 120 consecutive payments and continue making payments when you're applying for loan forgiveness. And your employer could actually tell you whether or not the city and the place that you work is part of the loan forgiveness or loan discharge. But if you go to studentaid.ed.gov, you can look up the loan forgiveness programs, and all of the applications are on that website as well.
So there's some concern that we're going to be making some major changes to the public service loan forgiveness program with President Trump and DeVos, Secretary DeVos. Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about that, Sandy Baum, at the Urban Institute?
Yes, there have been proposals to do away with public service loan forgiveness, to modify it. I hope and expect that if they do change the program, they would grandfather anybody who already has taken out loans with the understanding that this loan forgiveness will be there. The reason people are worried about it is because it turns out that if you borrow hundreds of thousands of dollars and go to, say, professional school, you know, become a doctor or a lawyer or something like that, you could end up getting a lot of debt forgiven. And that wasn't really the intention. The intention was for people who are really in occupations that pay very poorly, even though they spend a lot on their education. And so I think there's reason for concern, and they're making it hard to go through the process. There are big bureaucratic barriers. They really need to ease these barriers. They need to stop telling people they qualify and then changing their mind. But I think that it's very reasonable to believe that the program will continue to be there for the people who have counted on it. But you've got to watch it very carefully because, obviously, there are lots of unexpected things going on in Washington.
So that means people need to keep records and pay close attention
to. People need to keep records, and they need to pay attention to what the rules are and if the rules change. So they'll be on top of it. There are lots of court cases about people who have been told that they will qualify, and then suddenly they're told that they don't qualify. So you got to keep your ears open and make sure, yes, that you keep records and that you're in the right repayment plan.
And Rebecca,
an income-driven repayment plan.
And Rebecca Alejos, conflicting information I see. Consolidate your loans. Don't consolidate your loans in order to take advantage of the public service forgiveness. What should you do?
So if you're thinking about consolidating your loans, make sure you consolidate early. Don't wait until you've been making payments, because when you are thinking about loan forgiveness, if you consolidate after, your repayment starts at zero again. So you might have made 100 payments, and you're pretty close to that 120th payment, but then you decide to consolidate. You start at zero, and then you have to make those consecutive payments again. But I wanted to also say with the loan forgiveness program, it's interesting because what will happen is the amount of money that is forgiven is used as taxable income at the end of the year when you file your taxes. So let's say you make $30,000 a year, but you got $50,000 forgiven. Well, in that tax year, they're really going to say you made $80,000, so then you could be in a whole other situation at that point.
That would be painful. I mean, you get your loan forgiven, but if you don't know that's going to happen, boy, oh boy.
That's right.
And so have you seen people deal with that?
We have. And so all of a sudden now they're in this new tax bracket. Now they owe money that they don't have because they just got their loan forgiven because they decided, you know, I'm going to teach in a low-income city. I'm going to make my payments consecutively, and now I'm recorded to have $80,000 in income for the year.
There's a lot of other issues like that that are popping up in regards to the tax plan that the House Republicans approved a couple weeks ago, and what's happening with student loans and paying for college and making college more accessible. We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. Our phone lines number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Tell us your reality when it comes to student loans. Has it worked out for you? Do you feel that you were taken advantage of by a predatory system, or did this open the doors to you to get that education and achieve that upward mobility? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this quick break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The median bachelor's degree borrower owes a median of $25,000, while those seeking graduate degrees owe a median of $45,000. That's according to the Pew Research Center. What does it mean in America when, in order to get a higher education degree, you have to put yourself deep into the red? How does this benefit us as a whole, as a society? Should we be looking for ways to help people succeed in college and up higher education and not penalize them for this process? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Tweet us at @tprsource. And here's a caller. Let's get John on the air. Hey, John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me. So I don't think there's enough folks out there digging into sources for funding or sacrifice to fund their education. I joined the military with part of the idea of, hey, I'm going to get an education after a couple of years. I did. And then when I went to graduate school, I spent time, like, you know, days and hours to find the funding for my education. So I've got a master's degree in nursing, and I got bachelor's and master's, and I didn't pay for it, but I did the time, I guess, up front to get it taken care of.
All right, John, I'm glad that worked out for you. Is that a good assessment of the situation? Sandy Baum, senior fellow at the Urban Institute. John's experience.
Well, John's experience sounds terrific, and that works for some people. Obviously, not everybody is going to join the military. And so some people can find ways of getting money other than that also, of course. We have some very generous financial aid programs. The federal government has Pell Grants for low-income students. Many states have, Texas certainly has a state grant program. Many institutions give financial aid to lots of students. It's complicated, but it's worth figuring out. We have to really understand that if you think about, you know, somebody has to pay for this. And there are many people who don't have the money to pay to go to college and absolutely have an obligation for society to make it possible for these people to go to college. On the other hand, there are many people who actually can really afford to go to college themselves. A lot of people at the University of Texas come from families that can easily afford to pay. So the real problem is whether we're using public funds to make it possible for everyone to get a good education. And we have to use those public funds well and realize that they come from taxpayers. So, yes, his solution is a great solution for some people. We need to make sure that there are solutions available for people in very different circumstances.
Here's a tweet that was sent out by Senator Orrin Hatch. It says, I grew up in a shack with a Meadow Gold dairy sign for a wall. I worked as a janitor to pay for law school. I believe in opportunity because I've lived it. His experiences of working as a janitor to pay for his higher education, it seems like people don't understand. Things have changed. If you went to university in the 70s or 80s, and you're able to work your way through school, or you're able to borrow just a minimal amount or find a way to get through, that's not the way things are today. So let me ask a reporter from the Dallas Morning News, Eva Marie Ayala. I mean, things are very much very different today, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And right now, Texas has a goal to have 60% of students or adults from, you know, 24 to 35 to have their bachelor's or an associate's degree by 2030. Now, Texas is very far from reaching that goal at this point. And part of that has to do with, you know, access to community college, access to university systems that they can afford. And there's many programs that are out there that are trying to help them get that leg up through transfer programs from community college to four-year universities. But getting that information out to students and making sure that they understand it and follow all the requirements for it gets complicated very fast.
We see a big sticker gap between going to a community college, going to a public university, and then going to some private universities like Southern Methodist University you've written about. Big differences in the tuition and fees price. Does it really matter that much in regards to the type of education that you receive, Eva Marie?
A lot of it just depends on the program that you're wanting to do. You know, some schools, some public schools are known for a certain program. Some private schools are known for a certain program. And it depends on the industry that you're looking to do. You know, I went to UT Arlington, which had a very great journalism program that I loved and was grateful for. But, you know, down the street, we also have Texas Christian University, which has the Bob Schieffer School of Journalism, which is, you know, fabulous there too. So it just depends on, you know, what you have access to and your tuition and what kind of help you get. And that's why a lot of folks should be paying attention to the proposed GOT or the proposed tax plan that's being debated right now.
Rebecca Alejos at Cafe College, what do you advise your students, potential students, They see the different brand names, different universities, Baylor versus SAC, you know, and of course they want to go for the big name, but do they have to pay attention to what they can afford?
Oh, we always talk about what that sticker price is. We have them look at the different universities, and I always tell students, you know, you have to think about, can you afford a campus visit? Are you and your family going to be able to jump in a car, go off to Baylor, go to Boston, and do a campus visit? If you can't, then you need to figure out how to get there, because a campus, they're going to try to sell you their institution. We're diverse. We build leaders of tomorrow. And I mean, it's
everything.
And
we can get student loans for you, no problem.
And we've got money for you, right? But then so the student looks at that program, and she was right. You know, if this same program at this institution could be comparable to this other one, and the price is going to be very, very different. You might be able to get financial aid at both institutions, where one is going to cover most of the tuition and fees, and the other not going to cover 10 or 20%. So we look at the program, we look at the student, we look at the student's grades, we look at it's the holistic view of the student. Are they going to be a good fit for that institution? Is that institution going to be a good fit for that student and that family? And not everybody has that money in the bank to write that tuition and fees check. So we have to talk to the parent as well. We see that your student wants to go to UT. Have you thought about the cost of attendance at these other institutions before they get there? And can they even get into the school?
That's the other question. Okay, another caller. This is Amanda. Amanda, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to call in. I have a couple of situations. I actually have a daughter who just graduated last year. But 5 years ago, she was trying to get into UT in Austin and didn't make the cut because she wasn't in the top 5%, but she wanted a degree in Korean, which is very odd. But at the same time, she has been hired by a private school over there. She does have an international studies major, minor in reading, and a minor in Korean. This did cost her, close, her, myself, and my husband, close to $65,000 because she was at UIW. Mm-hmm. My son is taking a different avenue. He's going into mechanical engineering. Right now he's at Northwest Vista, and he's doing very well, and he does, you know, have scholarships and everything. We're hoping his path is going to be a little bit easier in the sense of not having that much college debt. But I guess as a parent, I'm kind of like, you know, we live in in the Edgewood District, which is one of the lowest incomes here in San Antonio. And, I mean, it literally cost us an arm and a leg, you know, to make sure she had a future. But at the same time, it's like I actually just graduated in 2016 with two associates. I'm on my way to continue because I want to get a bachelor's. And it's kind of hard because I still have her debt.
All right, Amanda, thank you for the call. I'm hearing a lot in that call right there. She brought up a lot of interesting questions. One of them is the daughter pursued the education in Korea, and the other one, mechanical engineering. And I'm wondering about how we're seeing people steering away from pursuing the humanities in order to try to get degrees in which they think that, I mean, I don't know about, he sounds like probably a great kid, maybe he's got a head for mechanical engineering, but I know there's a lot of pressure now to not get a degree in philosophy or, you know, or art appreciation, because at the end of the day, you got to pay your bills. So Sandy Baum, is that impacting what's happening with higher education?
Well, the first thing is that, some kinds of programs, it's very important. If you're going to a community college and you're planning to get an associate degree, you get an associate degree in general studies, and then that's the end of your post-secondary education. You're going to have trouble getting that degree to pay off. But if you go to the University of Texas and you get a bachelor's degree in philosophy, people do that and do just fine, because that doesn't mean you're going to be a philosopher. Lots of firms want to hire people who have communication skills and critical thinking skills. And with a bachelor's degree from a good university, you can go to graduate school, you can get a good job that's not directly in your major. So again, there's not a simple answer to this. We need to have people who study lots of different things in society. And we certainly want people to think about the fact that if you train for a very particular job, that job might not be around in 5 or 10 years. So you better know that you have the skills and the capacity to learn new things without every time having to go back to school. So you want to think about your job prospects, but certainly we don't want maximizing income to be everyone's life goal.
And Eva Marie Ayala at the Dallas Morning News, have you done reporting on hardworking families who are doing all they can to get their kids through that higher education? And at the end of the day, they're proud. And they've got something to show for it.
Yes, and it's actually interesting. A couple of years ago, I did do a story whenever kids do take the SATs and they're filling out their paperwork for the College Board, they put down there, you know, what their intended major is going to be, you know, what they hope to be when they grow up, essentially. And a couple of years ago, it was very interesting that about the top five or six of the professions that they listed also coincided with some of the top needs of Texas workforce in a couple of years. There was a lot of engineering listed on there, as well as, you know, health and medical sciences listed, which I hope would be some relief to parents out there who are hoping that their kids will be able to get careers.
Okay.
But
we're going to take another break. We'll be right back. So we'll keep talking about student loans, student loan forgiveness. What's the future of student loans? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Source continues after this one-minute break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, talking about student loan debt. I had to take a quick break, and I cut off one of our guests in mid-thought, Dallas Morning News reporter Eva Marie Ayala. And so did you... want to tell us more what you were talking about, your observations were?
Well, right. When I was reporting that story, for example, there was a student here in Dallas. He was a junior, and he was already looking at colleges and what he wanted to do. And his first love was music. He loved to play, you know, any instrument he could get his hands on. But even now as a junior, he knew that that would be difficult to make a living at. So he put that his major was going to be engineering or science because he knows that's where the money is. So, you know, at this point, he's already trying to decide, is he going to follow his heart and do the music that he loves, or is he going to do something else that he thinks has more security? So in walking with him and his family, you know, just as they were picking up brochures for colleges, you know, already his parents were trying to talk to him in a way where he can try and find some kind of balance for both, because it is a very real conversation for families out there on how they're going to be able to inspire their kids and get them to do what they love, but also, you know, get them in a position where they can take care of themselves.
All right. And also, you have to live with yourself. I mean, if you have that much love and talent for music, it would be a shame to not bring that to its fullest. Let's go to our phone lines with Carl. And Carl, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. My comment and concern is more of a downstream argument from the student loan debt crisis. The problem becomes if people can't afford to pay themselves back for the educations that they need to get in order to be in the positions where they can teach, for example, then what is the benefit for society in stifling that level? This is like a non-entrepreneurial death spiral.
Right. So we're losing a lot of compassion capital that we might have in our society. People being steered away from jobs in teaching or in social work in order to work in business or other areas, which may not be as fulfilling, but they are able to comply with that. Rebecca Alejos, do you want to tell us more what you're seeing at Cafe College?
Yeah, so I think a lot of our students are coming in with an idea of what they think they want to do. And what we have to do is kind of figure that out. What are you good at? What do you like to do? And what is going to benefit you in the long run? So we have them look at the occupational outlooks. We have them look at the top jobs in 5 and 10 years. We're kind of getting them to think about the big picture, right? So what is your end in mind? And what are the steps you're going to take in order to get there? Yes, you have a love for music, but how can you combine that love for music with something that's going to pay off in the end and pay you back, right? So I think what our students are dealing with right now with our endorsements and being put into a specific track in high school to get them ready for graduation, hopefully that's going to help them figure out that end in mind. So if they're interested in humanities, they're part of an endorsement in a track in high school that gets them geared towards that type of humanities academy. Once they get into college, they're going to kind of match that with their major. And so with this new House bill and students picking endorsements, they're going to be on track. They're going to be in their science track. They're going to be in their humanities track. They're going to be in a communications track to kind of get them prepared for that after college work experience. But another thing that we want to do is tie in that experience. So you think you want to go into the medical professions. Well, if you're not good at math and you hate blood, is that really what you want to do? We have to give them an opportunity to shadow and to intern and to really get that exposure to these potential fields that they want to go into. Engineering is a really good example of that, because students say, you know, I want to be an engineer, but then what type? Chemical? Do you want to be mechanical? What is it that you want to do? And again, if you're not really good at math and science, doesn't mean you cannot be an engineer. It just means that you might be under some other umbrella in that particular industry. And I think that's what we have to get our students to see, is there are these huge opportunities and so many pieces that make that industry work. And you just kind of have to get in where you fit in, really.
All right. Another caller, Sean. And Sean, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just I recently graduated UTSA with a STEM degree, and I'm currently in medical school, excuse me. But I'm wondering, with the emphasis on college education and the skyrocketing costs and loan amounts, what are we doing to show students that college cannot always be the answer and trade schools could be the answer for a great career and lifestyle?
Okay, that's a great question, Sean. Thank you for calling in with that. Sandy Baum, senior fellow at the Urban Institute. Is a college path really for everyone? Is this actually, you know, is this part of a programming of our consumer culture that everyone's got to go to college and figure out a way to make that big paycheck so they can move to the suburbs and buy all those vehicles and stuff?
Well, I mean, the thing is that some people think going to college means going off to a four-year university, and that's just not the case. About half of the undergraduate post-secondary credentials that people earn are certificates and associate degrees, not bachelor's degrees. So if you want to be a plumber, you need to get an education to do that. You probably didn't graduate from high school with those skills, although maybe it should be possible to do that. So many people go to community colleges in order to get that kind of training. And you might not think of that as college, but it is. It's absolutely college. You use financial aid to do it. You're getting a college degree, and it's college credits. So should everyone go to a four-year university? No, of course not. Should everyone study, the same sort of academic curriculum? No. But almost everyone, given our current high school system, does need some sort of post-secondary education and training. There's a lot of push to increase apprenticeships, and that seems like a really constructive idea, so you can work and learn at the same time. But to think that you're not going to need some kind of education or training, for most people, that's just not going to work out very well.
All right. But some people are wondering about what this is, how parents are struggling to pay for college, and how things are going to be changing under a Republican tax bill that was approved recently. And Eva Maria Ayala of the Dallas Morning News, what concerns are there with that this plan?
Well, there's a number of concerns from folks who follow higher education in college. The biggest one of it would be, what would the tuition waiver impact be? Right now, if you're a parent and you work at a university, many universities allow you to have tuition waivers for your child, for your spouse, for yourself, to go and take classes and earn a degree. And that can be very significant savings for families. But under this new proposed tax plan, that tuition waiver would then count as part of your income. So that could significantly alter what tax bracket you're in, which could impact the rate and how much taxes taxes you have to pay on that. And the folks that would be hit with that most would be graduate students. About 145,000 graduate students across the country, they teach, they work in research labs, and they do that as part of programs that allow them to get tuition waived so they can do this. There's been some talk that if that provision in the tax code went away, then universities could potentially still offer that in some form of a scholarship, but then that wouldn't, there's very complicated rules at play on what they could require students to do and not do as part of that. So that could potentially impact research down the line.
And what about the possible loss of the deduction of your interest that you pay on your student loan?
Right. So right now, families, they can get a tax deduction on their interest rate for their student loans. And usually that's a few hundred dollars, but that could, you know, potentially go up to $2,000 or so. And under this proposed plan, that deduction would go away.
Sandy Baum, senior fellow at the Urban Institute, are these policies, how would they impact students?
Well, none of these are going to help students. I mean, it doesn't help students if you, and of course, deducting the interest on your student loans comes after college. And I just want to be clear that what's most important for students repaying their loans is this federal student loan income-driven repayment plans. You really, if your student loan payments are too high, you can't afford them, the federal government and your federal loans can get you into a program where you won't have to pay until your income is above 150% of the poverty line. And then you're only going to pay a very moderate percentage of your income. And if you can't afford it, your payments will be deferred and your loans will eventually be forgiven. So it's really, really important to look at your options instead of just throwing up your hands and defaulting or not making your payments. There are provisions for people who can't afford to pay. Maintaining those provisions is more important than the interest deduction, which saves people a few dollars that are important but doesn't really solve their problems.
And Sandy, during the presidential campaigns, Bernie Sanders had a plan for free college education. Hillary Clinton came up with a plan that not as strong as Bernie Sanders. Donald Trump hinted at something. He was going to do something. We never found out what. I guess that we're not talking about that anymore?
Many states are actually doing something about making community college tuition free. But a real warning about these programs, for low and moderate income students, we already have federal grant programs and state grant programs that make college tuition free for many low income students. Students from rich families don't need free tuition. Students from low income families need more than free tuition. They need help with their living expenses while they're in school.
All right. Sandy Baum, thank you so much. Senior fellow, Urban Institute, joined by Eva Maria Ayala at the Dallas Morning News. Rebecca Alejos, program manager at Cafe College. If you got a kid going to college, go visit her at the Cafe College. This is The Source at Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.